Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
I mean, as you can see right here, we're going to be talking a bit about, what's going on with the virus epidemic and, you know, how to handle that in terms of really keeping things calm and even perhaps turning this around and turning a crisis like this into a long-term, a long-term gain in terms of the relationship. So I know many of you, I talk with clients all over the world, and it seems like this is having an impact all over the place. You know, I was talking with clients in Australia the other day, and I know not everyone there has been closing their schools down, but I know the UK has started to do that. And I know here in the US, you know, me and my family, our kids have been out for about a week and a half now. And I'm not even on the end of, in the areas that are really on serious lockdown, like in the West Coast. I imagine a lot of you are probably experiencing a little bit, bit of some turmoil considering all the changes. As I've been keeping tabs on this, I noticed some other trends coming out here. I don't know if all of you who have seen, are really keeping tabs on this, but I know some articles coming out of, say, China, where their divorce rate has spiked amid the quarantines and whatnot. And I wanted to make sure that you all had some tools to handle this so that situations where there's already some issues, some problems don't spiral out of control. I mean, if you all are going to be spending more time together with your family during a stressful period, that's just a recipe for some extra stress, extra tension, extra problems. So, what do we do here? I mean, like I said, massive changes are happening, and a lot of you are probably spending a lot more time together than normal. You know, me, my kids, we have five kids. Our oldest is now just, newly a teenager, and I know that we are spending a little more time together as we are cutting out play dates, hanging out with friends and whatnot, and the kids are home from school. And, I do notice that on some of the days, even in my family, there's a lot more, there's a little bit more tension, or the kids get ramped up a bit easier. You know, just to be frank, the increased stress combined with close quarters, it does have a potential for conflict. In our family, we have two siblings in particular that are close in age that are usually don't get along. And this scenario with them spending a lot more time together is there's more of that. And certainly in a marriage, there's that potential as well. You can take this same situation, a crisis like this, and you can really let it pull you down, or you can use it to become to do something to grow from. You're probably seeing, with your children at home or spouses working from home, you're probably seeing some restlessness. You're probably seeing some increased conflict. You might be seeing some heightened or swingy emotions, like a lot of more anxiety, stress, fear, anger, dismissiveness. I talk with my wife, and we're very open about any sort of struggles that we have. I remember last week, as all the news was coming down, my wife, when she's stressed, tends to lean a little bit more towards anxious type symptoms. I'll be honest, everyone's the same way. Everyone has their quirks. So when I'm stressed, I tend a little bit more towards depressive symptoms, but my wife was really worried about everything that was going on and how this would affect family. Her parents also have some health issues. And, I started seeing these really swingy emotions, where things were really terrible. And then as I worked to help her to calm down, then she was super relaxed and calm. And then it would swing the next day to something bigger. And this is normal. You know, what I do want to say is everything is okay. Increased stress, anxiety, or worry is normal when your expectations have changed, or when stress has ramped up. This is not to be unexpected. The thing is many people are resilient, especially if you handle this in the right way. And today we're going to help you create a plan to make sure everything runs as smoothly as possible. I want to check right here. You know, sometimes I've had some audio issues. I just want to make sure that everything is running smoothly as we go through this. I'm just checking the feed here. Okay. It sounds like everything is going just fine. I wanted to check because, you know, I know as I streamed in the past, I've sometimes had some audio issues. I did see a comment, you know, asking if this is shareable. You know, what I can do is I might run this again on a different platform. But, you know, to protect everyone here, oops, I think we went back to the beginning. To protect everyone here, the posts on this group are, of course, private. You know, you aren't able to share it outside of the group. And, you know, there's just not any way around that, unfortunately. I might do we might release this later on, in a different format to make it shareable. But what we're going to talk about today, one, I want to talk about how to increase stability, comfort, and affection, long close quarters. Two, I want to talk about how to handle conflict when you're going to have to be around each other. And three, I want to talk about how we can turn a short-term crisis like this into some long-term gains. So why don't we go ahead and dive into this? So that first piece here, increasing stability, comfort, affection. You know, why would stability be important right now? I mean, it should seem obvious, but I want to make sure that we're all on the same page here. The thing is, many families right now are having their normal routines turned upside down. You're probably seeing this a lot. And I would be very surprised if this is not putting people into a heightened state of anxiety and stress. Maybe people are worrying about this, the security of their job. Or maybe you're worried about your kids' education. The kids are worried about being able to be, you know, to not be bored or, you know, be able to see friends. And creating some stability helps to replace anxiety and stress with that more calm demeanor. So, for example, my role in the family quite frequently is providing calm. You know, I'm not the kind of person to really provide a lot of organization in the family or some other things, but what I do really well for my wife and my children is I do provide calm. Like I said, some of my family is stressing out about this. And like I said, also said last week, my wife was really worrying about this. Now, just so you guys know, I did ask my wife if it was okay to share this story ahead of time. I always make sure that I'm respecting her privacy when sharing things like this. But, you know, as everything was coming down, my wife was worried, okay, what's going to happen if, you know, everything shuts down and what are we going to do? And what I recognize here is that my wife was looking for a sense of order, a sense of having a plan, some stability in her life, because a lot of things were changing. And so recognizing this, I sat down with my wife and said, okay, let's figure out a plan so that we can have some predictability going forward in the future. And that evening, what we ended up doing is we created a list of things, supplies that we might need, and we went out shopping and we braved the stores. We ended up going to Costco and had to wait in line for over an hour to check out, but we had our supplies. And this provided some more calm, because we at least knew that this specific thing would be predictable. We knew that we would have enough food, toilet paper, all the other essentials. That predictability created more calm. And my wife was able to relax. And, you know, because of that, you know, later on that evening, you know, whereas my wife was really worked up early in the day, what happened later in the evening is she was able to come home and really be present with our children. And we enjoyed a nice evening together. We had gotten some treats while we were out, and we had a, you know, a movie night with the kids. And it was because stability was reestablished as a family. The thing is, if people are relaxed, they're much more likely to be able to engage in other relationship building actions like joking and flirting, having fun, et cetera. So like when the kids went to bed, my wife and I spent a really pleasant connecting evening together, but which would not have been possible if she was still worrying about more practical matters. This is why stability, a heightened amount of stability is important when there are heightened amounts of anxiety, stress, or a disruption in routine. I think someone who speaks really well about this is a man named Kim Jong Pan. And I'm a small anecdote here. I went to look this guy up because my wife has mentioned him on a few occasions. And I'm just gonna admit, I got the name completely wrong. I thought it was Kim Jong Pan, you know, much more like a Korean spelling. But when I finally looked it up, I had never, you know, my wife has talked about this guy several times, and I've never, you know, really looked him up, just kind of listened to his teachings. And when I looked him up, I was quite surprised to see a very white guy, you know, his picture there. It's just a small funny thing. I was a bit surprised at that. But Mr. Pan, what he's famous for is, so a while back, he would go and visit war-torn countries to observe and help families under duress. He really wanted to help them out and see what he could do to help, especially the children there. And, you know, he recognized that because of the extreme amounts of trauma and the experiences that people have, he's especially interested in the children, that they were not reacting well to that. And he wanted to see what could be done to help the children come out the other end and not have any permanent emotional damage, you know, to come out as undamaged as possible. And what he started to notice as he studied, as he's observed, is that really healthy amounts of rhythm, schedule, and structure made huge differences in maintaining emotional health. For those of you who are really interested in this, especially in terms of parenting or children, he does have a fairly famous book. I think it's called Simplicity Parenting, Kim Jong Pan. It's used a lot in certain circles. I know, you know, like our kids attend a Waldorf school. I know it's really popular in those, in Montessori schools as well. But why? Why rhythm and structure? Why would we do this? So if we look at different needs theories, this is going to be me getting into the theories of things. I like pulling ideas from multiple directions. This is kind of always my MO, the way of working on this. You know, if we're looking at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, if we're looking at Chloe Madonna's and her basic emotional needs, safety and security, no matter what needs theory you're looking at, you're always going to see this need for safety and security. On Maslow's hierarchy, it's, you know, right up there after, say, food, shelter, water, things like that. It's like the next tier up. But it's no matter what theory you're looking at, it's coming up as a primary need. Chloe Madonna's in her basic emotional needs. She talks about how when people don't have their basic needs met, their basic emotional needs, they tend to scramble a bit. They tend to get a bit desperate, and they tend to act out quite a bit. And that in many cases, extreme behavior can be explained as missing needs. And the thing is, a crisis like this removes a lot of predictability, it removes a lot of safety, lots of structure. And so, you know, we're looking at this in terms of needs. It's understandable how something like this might create a lot of problems in a family or in a relationship. And, you know, as plans change, this causes a lot of emotional duress. And so creating more rhythm and schedules, predictability, structure can help replace some of the stability that was taken away because of the crisis. So what do I mean by rhythm, though? You know, I'm looking at the background. Rhythm, yes, as in drumming, but not really. That's not what I mean. Rhythm is going to be about having expectations. It's about having balance. It's about deliberate action. It's about, it is very different, though, from, say, necessarily routine. What I mean by that is, you know, routine would be having the same things happen every day at, like, specific times. But rhythm is a little bit more flexible than that. It's like it says here, it's flexible and fits people's needs. Now, we are going to be talking a little bit about routine as well, but I want to give you some examples of this. So yes, there is going to be a bit of that routine. Like, are there expected times to sit down and share a meal? One of the reasons why my wife and I chose to send our kids to a Waldorf school is because there are certain rhythms and routines. And, you know, we've found that that's especially helpful for our children specifically. So I know, like, for instance, my son, who's in the lower grades at the school, he knows that immediately, you know, after say story time, he's in kindergarten. You know, there's going to be some expectations for afterward. There might be a quiet activity first, like, you know, to sit down, share a meal, and then they're going to get into something more active afterward. And after they go outside and play for a bit, then they're going to come back in and do something a little bit more quiet. You know, it's really about a balance of time spent inside or versus outside, or active versus quiet. And, you know, like I said there, so in the kindergarten, they're very, very conscious of that. Or it's about noticing when your family is getting ramped up and transitioning to an improved activity outside. Like our kids, when I know that, when I hear them running around in our house and starting to scream, I know, hey, the rhythm here now, it's time to, you know, do something more active, but in a more appropriate setting. So we move them outside. And when they start, you know, getting a bit quieter and settling down, then it's time to come, you know, maybe back inside and do quieter activities like reading, baking. Maybe it's a perfect time for you to work from home and get that work done. It's about limiting problem solving time. You know, having time to solve marriage issues versus having specific time to work on and having specific time to work on the marriage. But also, you know, as people are getting exhausted about that, shifting focus to more fun. My wife and I, as an example, we have some rhythm like this. So, you know, we have regular times during the week where we can bring up concerns, more serious discussions, but we always have also, you know, specific times to have fun and to enjoy each other's company. And this balance of going back and forth creates a really healthy environment for us. Likewise, you know, we have a rhythm of, you know, much more physically intimate sort of activities and active activities like that, and versus quiet shared activities. And having that balance provides a rhythm where things can feel a bit more stable and secure. How you might apply this in, you know, a family setting is, of course, you know, having that rhythm for children in the home or you as a couple. And this is bound to reduce stress and allow, you know, like I was saying earlier, reducing that stress allows people to engage in more connecting activities, things that you would typically associate with relationship repair. So if there is a high amount of stress, make sure that you are reading into the situation well, and that you are, that you're looking at what's needed, and making sure that you're having a flow here. So that's all, a lot of that is kind of the ideas of, like I said, Kim Jong Pain. Now, certainly there's that need for flexibility, but if we're also looking at reducing stress during a time of crisis, structure can also be important during crisis. It provides stability when lots of changes have happened. It's about having a plan and having expectations. It's about being specific and letting people know what is happening. You're going to hear me, I'm almost contradicting myself. I'm talking about flexibility and structure, and there is certainly a balance to this. Some examples here. During an argument, you might, it's very possible that in close quarters, you might have arguments with your partner and you need to step away to take a break. Well, if you're trying to provide more stability, more structure to this, make sure that you're giving them a time when you will be available to continue. This is essentially finding a way to say yes and under what conditions. I know a lot of people who are a bit more avoidant towards conflict. They basically shut conflict down. They shut resolution down. But, if you're trying to really maintain some stability or structure within the relationship, if you're trying to grow closer together, especially under these conditions, find ways to say yes to your partner and under what conditions it would work for you. Make your no's be yeses. That looks really weird as I typed it out and as I'm reading it right here. For instance, I'm going to keep giving examples of, my own marriage. Not to toot my own horn, but I think I do pretty well in my relationship with my wife, Jen. I don't always want, I might not always be interested in, some of my wife's interests. But for instance, if she's really wanting to watch one of these sappy romantic movies, of course, I often will do that just because I know that she likes them. But there are some cases where I'm not quite as interested in it. But rather than saying no, I might find some way to be a bit more interested. I like to snack and I like cooking and I like food. So I might say, hey, why don't we get something special to eat and we can share that as we watch your movie. Or in more extreme cases, I'm thinking of, as couples come apart, it's really hard to really come to any sort of an agreement. I'm thinking of someone I was talking to just the other day, and their partner wants out of the relationship, and they're clinging on really hard. And I was telling them, hey, as you cling on to this, it's pushing them further away. And so I was helping them to come to some compromises. And so instead of saying, no, you can't leave and you have to talk about this and you need to work on this with me, I was saying, okay, how can we turn this into a more cooperative experience? And we started talking about how she could talk to her husband and saying, okay, I can let you go, but I need some reassurance and I need to be able to talk with you as you, find another place to live. As you pull away, I need some reassurance that we can continue to try to work things out and do better together. And, got some feedback that, her husband was really open to that suggestion, because he was opinion, his choices were considered, and she was able to meet some of her needs as well. Creating schedules might add a lot of structure, especially during when under close quarters like this. For instance, after lunch, here's that rhythm idea again, having a quieter, lunch is a quieter activity. It might be time to go outdoors and maybe having the expectation that after lunch, we're always going to do something active outdoors. It creates a sense of security, knowing what's going to happen next. This is good for couples. It's good for children. And when it's good for children and reduces the turmoil in the home, it helps couples be able to connect better as there's less stress. Do you see how it all feeds into itself? Like if you're helping the family be more stable, it helps your relationship be more stable also, as there's less worry, less mental load. What about when this doesn't work though? And there's a lot of conflict as you are in close quarters. If you are experiencing higher amounts of stress, like those disrupted schedules and expectations, I'm gonna say it's much more likely. I wouldn't be surprised if many of you have already experienced a fair amount of conflict. If normal coping mechanisms are removed, such as leaving the home, people tend to react with heightened responses. I remember, I referenced this on occasion, when I worked at a rehab center, a lot of people use their addictions to cope with stress and anxiety. And when you remove those coping mechanisms, it can become really difficult for people to cope with that stress and anxiety. So if, for instance, you guys would create space or alone time under normal conditions and you take away that ability to cope with things by backing off, it's going to escalate. And so without a way to handle that conflict, it becomes really easy for things to spiral out of control. And so we need to go through a few things that you need. And first off, it would be extremely helpful to have a plan ahead of time on how to handle some of these situations. Conflict is bound to happen in close quarters and with high stress, and having a plan ahead of time gives people a way to succeed. If you know what you or your spouse or your family, if you know that you guys are prone to arguments and tension, it would be extremely wise to have a plan on how you might handle that, especially given the circumstances. I can't stress enough, it's not enough to have a punishment for arguments. It's much more useful to have a plan a way to succeed. Providing ways to succeed when something is going wrong gives a lot of assurance, stability. Reading into that, it's going to help out a lot with your relationship. So things to plan for. What happens if I need some time for myself? What happens if I'm upset? How can I handle that appropriately? Do you need to step away into a room where people can't follow you? Or do you need to take a break? Do you need to go relax somewhere? How do we fix things after an argument? Like, how are we going to communicate when it's an okay time to talk about things? Essentially, you're looking to provide a sense of a plan in order to help everyone to feel more secure. And what you need to plan for is going to be dependent on what your family needs. So maybe you need to come up with a list there. What do we need? Where are the areas that we are seeing a lot of conflict? What do we need from this? What is our plan for this? Second, you need to be able to calm things down. Even the best plans may not happen. People are used to doing things a certain way, and they might have the best intentions, but sometimes it takes time to get used to things. And conflict and tension may be unavoidable in some circumstances. So what do you do? If an argument has escalated, the best measure is simply to get some space. So let your partner know you need that space, if that's the case, or allow your partner to have some space. If you're going to do that, I think it's important to let your partner know when you will return to this discussion, if it is that they're wanting to continue. I see too often people storm off away from an argument and things aren't resolved and it gets swept under the rug and resentment gets built up. And that can really cause some damage. So, I think it's important to calm things down and reassure them, hey, we will address your concerns here when we're thinking a little bit more clearly. And before you revisit, I think it would be important for you to take time to get calm, to get to a healthy place mentally before you return to any argument. And you also need to repair. Before you return to an argument, take a moment to think about how the other person's view might make sense. Understanding almost always as a first step can help a whole lot in overcoming conflict. I mean, imagine, you know, an argument that you've had with your spouse, maybe with your children, with other people. Imagine if your spouse, you know, a couple hours later came back and he said, you know what, I can see how what you said made sense. I can see that, you know, you were really trying to do what was right. You're trying to care for the family, or you're just trying to make sure that you had some respect for yourself. And they explain things as if your side was reasonable. And then they wanted to discuss some solutions. How would that feel to you? I imagine that would feel amazing. It would feel great if your spouse did that for you. So what I'm suggesting here is be the person that sets the example and provide that for your spouse after the fact, once you have calmed down. Some helpful things to review as you repair is, you know, what part of the conflict is your own responsibility? Underneath it all, what emotional need were you seeking out? Were you trying to get some respect, some care, some value, some connection? Help your partner to see the positive intentions, the reasonable intentions that you were seeking out. I want you to, you know, talk about, like, what positive outcome were you wanting from that encounter? It might be that I want Johnny to listen here. And your partner's like, well, you're being controlling and trying to tell him what to do. Okay, well, if you take away a lot of that and just simply dig underneath what outcome you're wanting from it. I imagine in this hypothetical argument over Johnny doing his homework, you're probably wanting what's best for Johnny. And you probably want to make sure that he has some stability, some rhythm in his life, given what's going on. And you wanted to make sure that you supported each other at this. So, you know, and then you ask, okay, how can we have these things? This is how you might repair, is turning it into a discussion, helping your partner know what you need and involving them in resolving that and having some ideas on how you might get what you're looking for. You know, you might even say, what positive outcomes were your partner likely wanting from that encounter? Because in my opinion, most everyone has positive intentions. Most everyone does in most every encounter. Even if those intentions are a bit self-centered, you know, sometimes you need to focus on yourself and the intentions are probably good. And if, you know, as you're repairing, you're discussing your positive outcomes that you're looking for, your partner's positive outcomes that they're looking for, becomes much easier to discuss how to come together. So lastly, you know, as we're calming things down and as we're providing structure, how do we actually turn this situation into some long-term gain? Because I'll admit it can very easily turn into a situation where it tears you apart. But, you know, I'm a big believer in that challenges can frequently, if handled correctly, can be used for a period of growth and connection. I would not be where I'm at today if I didn't have the challenges that I've had in my life. And I want to say that again, like I would not be here speaking to all of you, you know, having a voice that reaches hundreds of thousands of people, and you know, being able to work from home, own my own business, I wouldn't be here if I didn't have the challenges that I'd had in my life. Some of those were even challenges that I brought on myself. The difference in whether it pulls you in and keeps you down or whether you grow is in what you are focusing on. And so the big question to ask here is, what do you want at the end of all this? What do you want from this crisis? In trying to direct a situation, it's often helpful to start with what you want rather than what you don't want. Do you want peace or connection or family time? Do you want stability or respect? And what does your spouse want? If you dig deep enough, I imagine deep down, you probably want very similar things. sometimes what I like to do, if you guys, if anyone has been listening to me long enough, you've probably heard of me mention what's called, what I call the dead man test. And this is an important test in defining what you want, because almost invariably when I ask people, okay, what do you want? What do you want from your relationship? What do you want from your marriage? They will tell me, well, I don't want to fight anymore. I don't want my husband to leave. I don't want my wife having an affair. And if you're paying attention, you'll hear that those examples that I gave are all things that the person does not want. And the dead man test is helpful in this because, you know, in trying to establish what you want and the goals that you want to accomplish, if a dead man can accomplish what you're looking for, it's probably not a good goal. Is a dead man going to cheat on you? No, he's just going to sit there. Is a dead man going to insult you or argue with you? No, it's just going to sit there. Is a dead man going to lie to you? You know, if you don't want him to, you don't want them to lie. Well, yeah, that dead man is not going to lie to you. You know, I want you to keep that in mind as you start to set goals. We're going to talk about goals here in just a second. Something else to consider, like as I asked, you know, what does your spouse want? You know, if you can establish some common goals here between what you want and what your spouse wants, and you can say, hey, look, we're working on this together, you're much more likely to get less friction and tension. The thing is, like I said, often in our efforts to fix things, we focus in on what is wrong instead of what we want. There's that dead man test here. We say, my husband is drinking too much. I didn't want him to stop that. And I want him to stop, you know, being so lazy. And I don't want him to yell at the kids. And I, you know, all these problems. The problem with that is that a focus in on what's wrong doesn't give a direction for success. It simply tells people what they shouldn't do. It comes across as judgmental or critical. It puts people's defenses up and, you know, gets them to a point where they're defending themselves rather than focusing on solutions. Now, focus on what is wrong results in arguments instead of progress. As the person says, no, I'm not doing that. I, you know, you're the one that's the problem, they might say. You get around a lot of that if you're saying, well, what I would really like here is I want to make sure that we have some more respect for each other. And I really want to make sure that I'm respecting you. Why don't we talk about how to you can might be able to feel better and how I can feel. There's no need to defend yourself in that discussion. Thing is, if your focus is great, you're consistent, you know, you can't absolutely control things, but your consistent focus can set the tone. While you can't control your household's emotions, you can set an example. It's much more likely for people to act in kind when you demonstrate what's wanted. Likewise, a negative tone often results in negative reactions. So if you're saying, you're just sitting around the house and, you know, you're not doing anything. Okay, well, this negative tone, you're going to get some pushback. You're going to get some negative reactions from your family. Other ways to turn this, you know, into more long-term success is a shift towards that long-term gain. As you get, you know, I want to point something out here. As the two of you, or as your family is in closer quarters, I'm just going to point out, like, there is more control over the situation. It can allow you to direct results a little bit easier, you know, as opposed to everyone going off in their different directions, people going off to work. It allows, you know, for there to be a lot more action, a lot more cooperation, a lot more ability to connect, as because you have a lot more control over what's going on. And if you can use this time period where there is an ability to naturally have some more control, developing habits now can lead to a lot to continued habits later. What I'm getting at here is this is an opportunity as you are closer together. Just physically, you know, with schools and businesses shut down, it provides some more flexibility and time for you to have some personal reflection, have more time as a family, have more time for study, have more time for meaningful discussion. And the thing is, if you're looking for some gain, if you know what you want and you plan how to get there, you're much more likely to get it. So, you know, if you want, you know, I want to talk about how to actually define this, how to plan out the long-term gain here. And I'm going to just say a broad or vague goal is a goal that's not going to happen. I'm going to go back a couple slides and I'm going to take a look at this. I want to point out, like, the things that you want, peace, connection, family time, stability, respect, are all very vague goals. I'm going to admit those were vague goals, and we're going to adjust this just a little bit. Broad or vague goals are goals that just won't happen. And defining what a broad goal looks like helps it to become more manageable. Imagine getting up in the morning and you're saying, okay, I'm going to work on my goals. My goal is to be happier. Well, how do you get up in the morning and work on being happy? That's a really difficult thing. It's too broad, too much to handle. It's a bit overwhelming. And so people tend, you know, when they start to feel overwhelmed, they take a step away from those goals. And this is why those New Year's resolutions quite often fail, because they're not planned out, defined well enough, and so such. And, you know, you can often get around this by breaking a goal down into simple steps. Makes it easier to take action. So some examples here. The goal is more peace in the home. We might say, we want to define what that looks like. So more peace in the home might be more quiet family activities. It might be movie nights together as family. It might be talking about disagreements. And then you can break that down even further. Like, here's what it would look like. So now I need some steps to take to actually make these things happen. So maybe steps are writing out family rules for peace in the home, reviewing those rules with the family, talking with the spouse about rules they want to include, engaging in activities that might require those rules, actually printing out a list of movies that everyone wants to watch. And, you know, you're breaking down what it looks like into very easily to accomplish steps. Because it's one thing to say, oh, I want peace in the home. What do you do then? But it's really easy to say, I'm going to write out family rules for how to have peace in the home. It's really easy to say, I'm going to talk with the family about what movies they want to watch for movie nights. That is an easy piece of the goal to carry out. If the goal is more connection, well, what does that look like? Maybe it means time together in the evening after the kids go to sleep. Maybe that means family outings during the day, walks or outdoor adventures. So what actionable steps would we have to take to get there? Maybe it's talking about with the family about desired activities, checking the weather to see if the outdoor activities are possible, scheduling time to make it possible, putting children to bed early to create more time as a couple. You plan out your goal. You actually take a look at what it looks like. And then you actually decide what steps would actually be necessary to get going there. This is an easy, much more manageable goal to accomplish. If you're saying, okay, I'm going to create more connection, and one of the things I'm going to do is put the kids to bed earlier. All right, so these are my suggestions for all of this. Now, what I'm going to say is, normally I do not put in really detailed trainings like this. I mean, this is, you know, taking very actionable steps. I mean, this is just kind of a smaller example of what we offer as a company just on the regular basis. You know, if you do, when you do sign up for services like this, we have trainings coming out like this all the time. You know, very specific things that we ask you to do and whatnot, and very direct help. So if you've enjoyed this training that we put out there, you know, consider taking it some steps further and seeing what other services that we have to offer. If you're looking for some extra help, make sure that you just message us directly on Facebook. I do have assistants helping to manage some of the messaging. So you can certainly message Heather Choate or myself to see what kind of options are available, or, you know, you can apply for a free consultation to learn about how our coaching can help you. if you're looking for that, you can absolutely schedule a call with us. You go to www.highthrivecoaching.com/apply and you can talk with someone from our team to see if our program would be the right fit for you. So thank you all for listening. I know some of you are wondering if you can share this. We'll look into some options a little bit down the road, and we'll announce as those options become available. But certainly if you think this is helpful to other people, get them to join the group. That's always a quick way to get in here. This, of course, will be in our video section. And you can always refer back to it there. But anyways, thank you all for listening, and let us know how we can help you in the comments if there's anything we can do. We'll be checking them. All right. Good luck, everyone. Hope you all have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you all later.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.